Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy, but being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com today to get 10% off your first month.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome to a new episode of Fightful Movie Club, episode number 7, where we are reviewing the classic film Little Shop of Horrors, and our special guest today is none other than Allison Kay. Allison, welcome to Fightful Movie Club. Thank you for joining us. How are you doing?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing well. Thank you. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. We are back. This is our first episode in a few months, so we are very excited to be here and very excited to get to do this show with you.
Heck yeah, me too. I'm excited.
Yeah, no. This is one of my favorite movies, so I was like thrilled when you picked it. But just for anyone who's a fan of you or who's just watching this for the first time and maybe doesn't know you so well, mm-hmm. we were just kind of curious, what are some of your favorite movies, or like, what did you grow up enjoying to watch? Just that sort of thing.
Yeah. I am a huge horror movie fan, and it was really hard to pick what movie I was going to cover with you guys, because Allie and I actually recently started a horror podcast called The Chainsaw Girls. So if you do like horror movies, definitely check it out. It's available on all major platforms. We have a YouTube version up now. We're doing our first live screening, by the way, October 20th in Buffalo. So if you guys are around or you want to travel to Buffalo, New York, come watch The Lost Boys with us. But it was hard for me to decide, okay, what horror movie can I talk about with you all that we're not going to cover on the podcast? And Allie hates musicals. And I actually am not a huge musical fan in general either, yet Little Shop of Horrors is one of my favorites. I know I'm kind of like going off on more than what you just asked me, but it's okay. I'll circle it back. I was thinking like, why do I love this movie so much? Because there are so many musicals that I haven't seen or that I don't want to see. And I realized, okay, Little Shop of Horrors, one of my favorite movies of all time. Phantom of the Opera, I enjoy. Rocky Horror Picture Show. So then I realized, oh, it's when they're horror related. Horror, not horror, because, you know, that word is hard to say. Really hard to enunciate. But yeah, I realize if they are horror based or related or adjacent, then I like them a lot more. Also, one that falls in the category that's not horror is Grease. But it's because I grew up watching Grease. My sister was obsessed with it. We would watch it all the time. I should be sick of it. But it's not one of my favorites, but I can tolerate it. And I know all the songs. Maybe that's why it's like a nostalgia thing. But I love horror movies, so horror musicals I can tolerate. I also love comedies, and Little Shop of Horrors is definitely a horror comedy. So some of my favorites are, I feel like I'm going to be judged for these answers, but it's okay. I'm just going to put it out there anyway.
No judgment ever.
Maybe not from you all, but I don't know who's watching. They're like, oh, I love Scary Movie 1 and 2. Like, I could quote both movies in their entirety. It's actually a problem. It's probably really annoying. Allie and I just covered Scream, actually. That's the episode that dropped this week, as we're recording anyway, the time of this recording. And it was so hard for me to not say every scene that Scary Movie parodies from Scream. It was so hard not to be like, and in Scary Movie, they do this. But I'm like, that'll be really annoying to people who don't care. So it was really hard not to do that. Scary Movie 1 and 2, I love The Wedding Singer. Not a horror movie. Yeah, so good. Oh my gosh, I feel like The Wedding Singer is so underrated. And 50 First Dates, like Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore, they just, you know, they should. I wish that she was always the female lead in all of his movies, but I guess that would be kind of weird to his wife, maybe. I don't know. But I am not crazy about the action genre in general, but I will watch it. However, one of my favorite movies of all time that I almost suggested for this, but I was like, no, we're going to go with horror, is Leon the Professional. Oh. Have you ever seen it?
I love Leon the Professional.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I heard some weird things about that movie recently, but we're not going to dive into that. But I was like, I'll look into that later. But as a movie, oh my gosh, like the story, Leon, Matilda, like between Little Shop and The Professional, I think, I don't know which one's one and which one's two, to be honest, for my favorite movies.
We'll save that one for the next time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a lot to dissect in that movie too.
Yeah. So with Little Shop of Horrors, is this one that you saw when you were younger, or did you come across it like a little bit later on?
I did see it when I was younger. So I think there is a nostalgia factor there too. But I didn't appreciate it as much until I was older, of course. You know, there's a lot that I found out more recently that I just wasn't looking into when I was a kid. And I think it was like a safe horror movie for me to watch as a kid. I was not allowed to watch R-rated movies. So when I saw Leon the Professional as a child, that was definitely with my dad, not with my mom. in my mom's household. So with Little Shop of Horrors, I think it kind of reminds me of Goosebumps in a way, in the sense that it's a comedy, but to a child especially, it's scary. You know, there are monsters in this movie, but it's, as an adult, I wouldn't say it's scary.
Yeah.
No, exactly. And you know, the thing about this movie that I absolutely love is there's great actors in it. You know,
oh my gosh.
And Ellen Green, and then you have like, the special appearances with the actors that are not in the film long. Steve Martin was fantastic in this film, even though he was not in it long. I think he was honestly one of my favorite parts in this whole movie was Steve Martin.
Absolutely. I'm a
Steve Martin guy. So, he made this movie enjoyable, like for me, cause I'm not a big musical guy myself, but I grew up, my sister loved Grease. Like that was
okay.
Like, her movie. So, it was just one of those things, but I caught myself amused a few times rewatching this for the first time in years. And, the one thing I noticed was, man, I miss Rick Moranis being in movies.
Like, yeah.
I miss that man. Like he was so good.
Yeah. I think he stopped acting to take care of his wife, I believe.
Yeah. And now he's just a family man. So good for
him. Yeah. You. I love that though. I'm like, that's so Rick Moranis. That's such a Rick Moranis thing to do.
Yeah. He was the reason that I first watched this movie when I was a kid too. I'm like a huge wimp, so I don't do like super well with horror movies. So as a kid, this was one where I was like, okay, it's a musical. I'm into that. It's got Rick Moranis, very into that. Mm-hmm. And then you just see it. It's not like super scary. Like I enjoy like the puppet work.
So yes.
It's not like scary in like the traditional sort of way.
Yeah.
More of like build suspense and it's kind of like moments where there's like, oh no, don't keep stepping backwards. Don't keep stepping backwards, right. That sort of stuff. So yeah, I've loved this movie since I was a little kid. And as for Steve Martin, I'll just say it. I think it's one of like maybe the greatest supporting comedy performance ever.
Yes.
Every time he takes a hit of the nitrous and laughs.
Yeah.
I just break down.
Oh my gosh. Hit so funny. Good. His song, The Dentist song, so good, where you're just learning that he was a sociopath since childhood, and his mother convinced him to go be a dentist so he can hurt people and make money. I'm like, I mean, I love the hustle there, and the but also, he is so good. He's him, I mean, all of them really, but it does feel like this cast, you can't imagine someone else playing their roles. I know that this is on Broadway, so a lot of people have played the other roles, but when I watch this movie, like Steve Martin, Rick Moranis, Ellen Green, I cannot picture anyone else playing those roles as well as they did. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, continue.
I was just going to say that you reminded me, actually, yeah, there is a lot of puppet work in this movie. That's going to be my selling point to get Allie to watch this, because she loves puppets. She loves puppetry in movies. Puppet Master is one of her favorites. I need to bring up the puppet work to her for sure.
Yeah. I guess that works perfectly, because the guy who directed the movie, Frank Oz, he was also kind of in that community, but probably most well known for, he was the person behind Yoda.
Yep.
In Star Wars. He did a lot of work with Sesame Street. He did a lot of work with the Muppets. He directed Muppets Take Manhattan.
Yeah, he was the voice of Miss Piggy too, right?
Yeah, Miss Piggy. Yeah, absolutely. And he did a couple other good comedies, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels with Steve Martin and Michael Caine, which is one of the all-time greats. If anyone's not seen that one, definitely, definitely watch it.
Yeah.
He did Dark Crystal as well. So if anyone's ever seen Dark Crystal. The puppet work is really, really cool.
It's so good. And it was so complex. I think I read somewhere that because the puppets grow over the movie, over the course of the movie. So at the end, I want to say Audrey 2 is like over 12 feet tall. And they had a scene where Audrey 2 is singing, and all of the little puppets start singing too with him or her. I read somewhere also that Audrey 2 is a female, but either way, all the little tiny puppets start singing, and that was such a complex scene that they had to have over 60 people operating. It's wild. Also, that when which song is it? I want to say Feed Me. Where he's like, "Feed me, Seymour." Yeah. Also, we'll get to the songs, because like I listened to the whole soundtrack today during my workout.
Feed me, get it.
I was working out in my garage, but if I was at a public gym, people would have been looking at me like, "Oh, this girl's fighting her demons." Meanwhile, I'm listening to like Suddenly Seymour.
that's my go-to. Yeah.
Suddenly Seymour.
Oh yeah.
I think my favorite is the Skid Row song. Skid Row or Downtown. So good. That song, like that song could bring me to tears if I'm in the right mindset. I know I'm totally sidetracking. I forgot what I was even talking about, but that song, like there's a line Rick Moranis starts singing. I would sing, but I cannot sing, where he's like, "Someone show me the way to get out of here." He's like, "Someone give me a shot, give me my shot or I'll rot here." And I'm like, this is about indie wrestling. Or really anywhere. Like, even I'm sure there are people that are signed to major companies that feel that way, that like, I'm rotting here on Skid Row, like someone give me my shot or I'll rot here. That line, I'm getting chills right now just thinking about it.
What was I saying before? I'm sorry. Honestly, I don't even know, but that was perfect, because I wanted to talk about the music anyway. Just because the movie was written by Howard Ashman, and he wrote the lyrics for the songs, the music composed by Alan Menken, who, if a lot of people don't know, they were also the guys behind Disney's kind of resurgence in the 90s. So they did the music for Little Mermaid, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast. And then Howard Ashman sadly passed away, but Alan Menken kind of continued on and did like Pocahontas, Hercules, which he kind of brings back the Greek choir, the three ladies singing, which you see throughout Little Shop of Horrors. You see that in Hercules as well.
It makes so much sense why the songs are so good.
Yeah. So they were kind of, behind the resurgence of Disney in the '90s, which if you talk to people about like Disney in the '90s, like, oh, the music, like, you just remember all those songs. And it's the same with this movie. Like, once you hear those songs, they're so catchy and they stick in your head. And like, for me, I don't know, like what your kind of, taste in music is, but I grew up kind of like in like a small sort of beach town. So okay. I grew up listening to like the Beach Boys and a lot of like, it was like a really old community. So a lot of like doo-wop and stuff like that. So this album specifically with like, even the three girls, like they're named after like the Crystals, the Ronettes, Chiffons, and then even the voice of, even That's the voice of Audrey too. Say. He was
Levi Stubbs.
The Four Tops.
Yes.
So like I was kind of like into all this music as a kid. So then this movie sort of tied into that world. So that was like another big reason I fell in love with it.
Oh yeah, I actually just found out like more recently in the last few years about Levi Stubbs playing the voice of Audrey too, where I had no idea that. That was Levi Stubbs, who was born in Detroit. I'm from Detroit, and he was a Motown icon. Now I want to go to the Motown Museum so bad.
Yeah.
I might go this weekend.
That sounds
Which like if you don't fun. Think, anyone that's watching, if you think that you haven't heard the Four Tops, you absolutely have. Just listen to their top hits, go to their greatest hits. I Can't Help Myself, like Sugar Pie, Honey Bunch, that song. Reach Out, I'll Be There. It's the same old song. Like you've definitely heard. If you just play the first like 5 seconds, you'll be like, oh, I know the song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one of the all time great American vocal groups.
Yeah.
Rob, any songs of yours, any songs that stood out to you, I should say.
The songs?
Not really songs like in the movie. I just mainly got a kick out of the reactions and of just everything surrounding it, like the background. I was always constantly watching like the background stuff too.
Yeah.
So
the stage is so cool.
Yeah. Seeing the things in the background. And that's one thing that I've always concentrated on too. Like with movies that I've seen more than once, I kind of look for other things. And that was what was interesting was the stage. Like behind just little details in the background, I really enjoyed that. But nothing music wise, I just thought it was well done, and I didn't know a lot of about the musician who's done a lot of that Disney music and everything you mentioned. It's like, yeah, that was a good soundtrack. So yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah, all the Audrey 2 songs, I'm like. Like Levi Stubbs' voice is just, there's so much grit, there's so much soul. I'm like, of course he's a Motown legend. Once I found that out. Also, how amazing was Bill Murray in this movie? That's another very short-lived role.
I was literally just about to bring him up because I didn't actually know this until this morning. I was reading that all of his dialogue was improvised.
Yeah,
I did not know that.
Yeah, of course it was. Like now watching back, I'm like, that makes so much sense. And just as long as he was the sadist and Steve Martin, the other way around. As long as he was the masochist and Steve Martin was the sadist, they were like, do what you want. Yeah.
And now I got to go back and watch it with like the lens of knowing that Bill Murray is probably just trying to get Steve Martin to break the entire time.
That's what I imagine too.
How could I screw with him? What's going to make him like wreck this scene?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's even John Candy has a great, scene as like the radio for Skid Row Radio.
Totally forgot about that.
Character. Yeah. So I assume that then growing up, you watched the like original kind of theatrical version with like the happy ending. With the kind of happy ending.
Maybe this isn't a fun fact, but I have actually never seen the alternate ending, even though I've read about it. I think it's weird that I love this movie and I never went and watched and never, you know, looked it up. I think it's an extra on the Blu-ray now. As a kid, I never saw it. And I'm sure it's on YouTube at this point, but I just read about it. So I know that the bad ending was the plans take over and kill everyone, right? Take over the world.
Yeah.
And it tested so poorly in theaters that they were like, okay, we're going to give Ellen Green and Rick Moranis, we're going to give them their white picket fence at the end.
It did test really horribly with audiences because I didn't know I had the VHS as a kid. And then when I was old enough and I started buying like DVDs and Blu-rays and I put it in and it played the alternate ending for the first time. And
I was like, what?
I was like, wait, she's dead? wait, why are the plants taking over New York City?
Yeah.
Like, what's happening?
Yeah. You're like, is this a fever dream? Like, I don't remember this.
It's so weird. It's really, really weird.
I need to go watch it. Isn't it really long too? It's like over 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a 25 minute like musical sequence where the plants literally just start eating like the Statue of Liberty. And
oh my
like,
gosh. Yeah.
They're like, I need to go watch it. Tearing down, like they're just massive, massive plants and they're just destroying New York.
Yeah. There's another song too in the soundtrack that I never heard because I think it was from a deleted scene. It's like the meek, something about the
meek. Oh, yeah, the meek shall inherit.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's only in the alternate ending.
Okay.
And because in the regular one, they have Mean Green Mother from Outer Space plays. I love that song. That one actually got nominated for an Academy Award.
Hell yeah. It didn't win. Damn.
No, I wrote it down because I wrote down like a couple things and I need to keep better notes.
But notes is hard and studying a movie, we have learned the hard way. Like it is a lot of work.
Yeah, it got nominated for 2 Academy Awards. It was Best Original Song and Makeup and Costuming.
That's awesome. And yeah, it should. It's so good.
Yeah. Two Academy Awards. Mean Green Mother from Outer Space was nominated, and it was the first Oscar-nominated song to contain profanity in the lyrics.
Oh,
and it was also the first to be sung by the villain of a film. The other Academy Award was for Best Visual Effects.
That's awesome. That just reminded me. I definitely watched this as a kid. I mean, I already knew that I did, but I couldn't really like imagine it. But now I'm picturing watching this with my grandma in the room, and whenever Audrey 2, I forget what he even calls him, but it's like one swear word, right? It's not a lot.
Yeah.
I don't even remember the word.
I know it's a swear word.
Yeah. Calls him like a little shit or something. I don't even know what it is, but I'm like, I remember feeling like that because I was watching it with my grandma. She would allow it if it was like one little thing like that. For some reason, it's so random, but I specifically remember her telling us we could not watch Armageddon. She had the DVD. Oh. So we're like, oh, can we watch this? And she's like, no, Bruce Willis swears too much. We're like, okay.
Yeah. There's a certain family member of mine within earshot who is obsessed with that movie.
Armageddon?
Yeah. It plays in our house far too often.
Okay.
Yeah. We have like a very big Ben Affleck fan here.
I haven't seen it in a long time.
It's a point of conversation.
I think it's also parodied in the movie Superstar. Is that
yes, what
they're parodying? Yeah. So that's all I think of when I think of Armageddon. I think of the parody scene. Just like when I watch Scream, I can't help but think of all the parodies in Scary Movie. And I just laugh. I'm like watching someone get butchered on Scream and I'm laughing because I'm thinking about the jokes that they're making in Scary Movie.
So one of the...
Going back... Sorry, go ahead.
I cut you off.
You mentioned Scary Movie and that reminds me like one of... the Scary Movie. I don't know if it was the first one or which one it was, but the exorcism when they did the exorcist.
Yeah, that was the second one.
Yeah, that was like I remember my folks stopped by my house when I was watching it, and they're like, "What in the heck are you watching?" And then all of a sudden, yeah. like they had no idea. They're thinking I'm watching a horror film, and like here they are just watching. And my mom was just hysterically laughing, and my dad is like, what the hell is wrong with you? And you
know, at least one of them were laughing.
Yeah. Yeah. She thought it was great. Like but they ended up leaving because they knew I just remember that, like how much like Scary Movie, like I just enjoyed that part.
Yeah.
And when you brought it up,
yeah,
like, the other,
so good.
The other films like Scream, I was just thinking, I'm like, yeah, I remember that now. Like, so it just brought a good memory out. So
yeah.
Yeah, so one of the things that I kind of saw some people complain about online was they weren't like huge fans of Ellen Green, like Audrey's voice,
when she's speaking.
Yeah, they found it hard to understand her. Fall on that?
It's funny because I was thinking that today about her voice drove me crazy because it's really just the underdog thing. I think for me, she's so meek. I know Seymour is also meek, but they both are, right? And she's being abused in this movie. She says at one point in one of her songs that, you know, she'll meet a man and follow him blindly. That's in Suddenly Seymour. And how she talks is like, okay, doctor. You know, she has a New York accent, I guess, is why she says doctor like that. So I can see why people are having trouble understanding not only a New York accent, but a New York accent that's in this like quiet whisper voice. So I could see that. It drove me crazy because I'm thinking like, I just want her to like stand up for herself, you know, and she's just being abused. She has like I think she has a sling on at one point and talks about like having black eyes and broken bones, and she's just following him around. And I mean, I think that aspect drives me crazy because you want her to stand up for herself. So it's all of that combined. I understand where people are coming from.
Yeah. Even both her and Seymour, they both kind of have this almost, I don't know what you would call it, like this faulty core belief that neither of them is good enough, that they can't, they don't believe that they can be loved by other people.
Yeah. And
I guess that's why you kind of end up rooting for them to get together, because they can maybe give each other what they both so desperately need. And I think that's kind of what makes the romance, the love story of the movie kind of work. Even if at times you don't believe that she would say yes to marrying him after not having one date.
Yeah. That, well, I don't know. She meets a man and she follows him blindly. So
yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to follow you blindly to the white picket fence. Seymour is definitely a pushover in this movie. I would think that she wouldn't say yes after she realized that he's like allowing people to die or like killing people in the movie.
Yeah.
I don't know that this is shown in the movie, but I read that, that Audrey is supposed to be Mr. Mushnick's daughter. So the plant shop owner's daughter. Oh. I don't know if they go with that in the movie or not. It might have just been a theory. But when I read that, I was like, damn. So that would mean that he also, I hope people aren't, you know, looking for a spoiler-free episode when we're talking about this, but he kills her father then in that case.
Yeah.
When they get rid of the dentist, I think his name was Oren.
Yeah, Oren.
When they get rid of him, it's like, oh, well, he got rid of her abuser. So not condoning that, not saying that's the way you should handle it, you know, but in the movie, you're like rooting for them and getting rid of him. I also love, which song is it? Is it Feed Me? It's one of the songs with Audrey too, where he's like trying to, I think it is Feed Me, because he's like, feed me, Seymour, blah, blah, blah. Seymour's like, no, I don't know. I can't do this. This is crazy. And then they witness Oren abusing Audrey, and then they have a moment where they turn to each other and they start singing, and they're like, the guy sure looks like plant food to me. Now he's in on it. He's like, yeah, we're gonna get rid of him because he's a piece of crap. Also, a fun fact about that scene that I read was that the puppet's lips could not move fast enough to sing the song, because Rick Moranis and the puppet are singing face to face, and they had to slow down the song. So Rick Moranis actually sang a slowed down version, and then they sped it up because the puppet, it's a fast part of the song and the puppet couldn't keep up.
Oh. Yeah. And no one talks about like how hard, like everyone kind of lists off Rick Moranis's like all the movies they remember him for and like that, the performances. I don't think this one gets enough credit. He has to do like a lot of exposition and a lot of one-on-one acting with a puppet.
Yeah.
Like,
and singing.
That had to be so hard to do because so much of the movie and so much of like the puppet's character comes from like playing off of him.
Yep.
And if he doesn't like nail that perfectly, it doesn't work at all.
Yeah. Imagine you have to sing in slow motion and make it not look like exaggerated or really weird. I don't even know how you would do that.
I have no idea. They absolutely got like the casting spot on. I like to look for like casting sort of like what ifs, like if there was any alternate choices or who might have been in the movie if someone else wasn't in it. And all I could find, it looked like Moranis was the choice. It looked for Audrey. It said they had the studio wanted Cyndi Lauper, but she had turned it down, and that Barbara Streisand was reportedly also offered it. But I don't know. Do either of those two names, could you imagine anyone else in any of these roles?
I really can't. I mean,
it's hard to say in retrospect, but
it is. I really can't though. Like imagining Barbara Streisand, like obviously she has an amazing voice. I just don't think it would have the same vibe. I think Ellen Green just pulled that off so perfectly. Also, she was doing this on Broadway. Ellen Green was. So they like plucked her off of Broadway basically to act. And I think at the time they were saying, as far as they could recall, I don't know if this was in like a director's cut interview or something, but that was one of the first times they could recall of that happening, where the Broadway actor played in the major motion picture as well, which is wild. They're like, no, you are Audrey. We're going to bring you in. I can't imagine anyone else. Ellen Green, her voice, I think another part of it that she made the role so, how do I even say this? She was so perfect for the role is what I'm trying to say, is because she has that like little quiet voice, but then her singing voice is so powerful and it like hits you out of nowhere. And suddenly Seymour, she starts off that song so quiet. And then by the end, she's like belting it out and you're like, whoa, that's wild. Also on Broadway, like more recently, like relatively to the movie, she was playing Audrey still. And there's a clip somewhere on YouTube of, I don't know if it was like a practice or whatever, the way she is singing this song is wild. Like, I don't know if she was trying to make people laugh or if she was just so into it. I don't know what, but if I find it, I'll send it to you so you can watch it, because she's singing it so crazy. It sounds like she's going to throw up. Like, just so passionately, and like her voice is almost cracking, but it's not. She's intense. She is very intense.
I'll have to see that.
Yeah, I need to find it.
Every time I hear that song, even if it's not in this movie, if it just comes on the radio or it's like in another TV show, always just get chills, and then it makes me want to go watch this.
Yeah.
I was watching the Goldbergs, and they did like a Halloween episode, and one of the characters sang Suddenly Seymour.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is so great. And immediately I was like, I love this TV show just for the sole fact that they sang a song from Little Shop of Horrors.
I think Family Guy did it too, but I don't know if they changed the words or not, but it was like the old man was Audrey, I think, like the neighbor, and then Chris was Seymour, I guess.
I think I actually remember that.
Yeah.
That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Also, I know we're like probably way too late for this, but for anyone who doesn't know, this movie came out in 1986. So, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
It came out like a week before Christmas, like, what was that, 86? So, like 38 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
So,
yeah, and it's based in the 60s. So that explains a lot of the doo-wop. Yeah.
A lot of the doo-wop, a lot of that music. If you need a synopsis from it here, this is from Pauline Kael's review of the movie. She goes, the musical is taken from the off-Broadway show that was based on Roger Corman's 1960 quickie a junkie travesty of sci-fi genetic mutation pictures from a script that Charles B. Griffith threw together. Rick Moranis plays Seymour, the assistant in a Skid Row flower shop circa 1960, who tends to the ravenous little flowering cactus that he names after the sexpot clerk Audrey. Her steady date is a sadistic biker dentist, Steve Martin, and Bill Murray plays this brute's freak pain freak patient. And then it kind of lists off all the other people who appear in the movie, but basically the plant keeps growing as it feeds on blood and eventually has plans of taking over the world until Seymour saves the day. So as we kind of like get to the end though, with like this movie or any other movies, like with your like kind of career in wrestling, has there been any that have influenced you, whether it be like in terms of like attire, character, like anything in that sort of realm?
For a movie?
Or even TV.
I've drawn a lot of inspiration over the years from more like different performance arts. So like burlesque, showgirl. I had a attire back in the day, like the big feathers I would wear on Impact. So, you know, that's more like a showgirl aspect to it. I don't think so. Maybe just horror movie vibe in general. Like I used to come out to the ring with a machete all the time. I feel like that feels like a horror movie a little bit. I did actually, now that I'm thinking about it, during my machete days, I also did, Mia Yim broke my nose in a match at AIW back in like 2011, 2012, I forget. And when I came back a few months later, which was probably whenever I came back, it was too early. I wore a mask over my nose, but instead of like the shield that people will wear sometimes. I got like this Hannibal Lecter looking mask, but it was pink that I used to wear for AIW, and I would have that in my machete. So I mean that I can't deny is inspired by. I didn't watch Silence of the Lambs and then want to do that, but I saw the mask and I was like, yes. So yeah. I would count that.
A couple other things like about the film, it had a budget of $26 million, or $25 million, but in the box office it did $39 million, so that was considered at that time a huge success.
Yeah,
it's a cult classic now. Like I think sure. I think it was one of those movies that like it just blew up on VHS, and
yeah,
everyone got a chance to see it. Everyone got a chance to rent it, and I don't know if you like. I don't even know if you could make like a movie like this now. Like if you were to put it on like Netflix, would enough people find it and kind of come to it repeatedly? Like back in like the 80s, 90s, you had to like go to Blockbuster, or just if it came on TV, that's what was on TV. So you had to watch it, and they had like special showings at theaters and stuff like that. Like, did you ever go see this like at a theater with like a crowd of people who were also like diehard fans?
I didn't. And I've never seen it on Broadway or anything similar either. I've seen Phantom of the Opera on Broadway. I would love to see a live play of Little Shop of Horrors, but I haven't.
Would you be okay if they ever like rebooted it or remade it? I know there was talks a few years ago. I think it was Taron Egerton and Scarlett Johansson were going to be Seymour and Audrey. Then the project got scrapped, and then a couple years ago they said they're working on doing like a Little Shop of Halloween Horrors. I don't know if they're still making that or not. I'd have to double check that, but are you okay with them like remaking it, or would you rather them just leave it alone?
Personally, I am not a huge fan of a lot of remakes. I think there are certain things that I don't really understand the point. Like, it's a classic. It was done so perfectly. The actors were amazing. It doesn't need to be redone. So what commentary or what do you have to add to this movie that justifies remaking it is how I feel. I just personally feel like Little Shop of Horrors is already perfect as it is. Some movies I can understand where it's like, oh, I want to explore this element, or what if this happened, or da da da. But a lot of remakes just feel lazy to me, you know, like write something new. We want to see something new.
Yeah, for sure. Like one other like random tidbit about this movie. This was one of the first roles that Tisha Campbell had. She was known as Gina in the TV show Martin with Martin Lawrence.
Pam are in it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was one of her first roles. But the other question I was going to have for you, what is a movie that you've seen recently, a horror flick that you've seen recently that you really enjoyed?
Yeah, I actually just saw one very recently on a plane, and I feel like that really should go to show how great this movie is that I enjoyed it while I was on a plane, because it's not the best movie going experience when you're watching a movie on the plane. Even if you have good headphones, there's always like a loud buzzing in the background. It's a small screen. I always have to have closed captioning on because I can barely hear what they're saying. But I loved Lisa Frankenstein, and I feel like it falls right into this category. It's like a horror rom-com. I think that should be a new genre of movie. It's not a musical. There is a song in it, but it's not a musical. I don't remember the actor's names. I know it stars one of the Sprouse twins from Sweet Life of Zach and Cody.
Yeah,
I forget the actress's name, and I'm so sad that I'm forgetting it because she is amazing as Lisa.
Catherine Newton.
And what was that?
Catherine Newton.
Yes, there you go. Thank you. She is fantastic. Lisa Frankenstein is such a good movie. I don't even want to tell you what it's about. I mean, you can kind of guess by it's like a combination of Lisa Frank and Frankenstein. It's so good. Love it.
Robin Williams' daughter directed it.
What was that?
Robin Williams' daughter directed it.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that.
Yep.
I did not know that. I don't really know any of the fun facts about this movie because I saw it pretty recently. I would watch it again. And I think that's usually how I determine what my favorite movies are or what I would really recommend. But especially what my favorites are. If I can watch it again and again and again. So like Little Shop of Horrors, all the ones I mentioned earlier, like Wedding Singer, Scary Movie, I would watch Lisa Frankenstein again already.
Nice. Awesome. Rob, you watching anything that you would recommend?
what did I just watch recently that I really enjoyed? You go ahead and go. It's coming to me.
Okay.
To look it up because so I forgot the name of it.
I just had to switch phones, so I got an iPhone. So they gave me a Apple TV. I'd never had Apple TV, okay. So I'm catching up on all of their stuff. There's a new show with Vince Vaughn called Bad Monkey. That's absolutely fantastic.
Okay.
Also, I grew up loving like monster movies, and they have a show called Monarch. It's like Legacy of Monsters. It's like a Godzilla movie or a TV show. It's outstanding. The CGI is incredible. It's kind of scary. It's like really, really, really well done. If anyone hasn't seen Monarch, it's really worth your time. It's only 10 episodes. Yeah.
The movie I saw was The Beast Within. It's a newer, like, scarier movie. It has Kit Harington from Game of Thrones in it. Just basically, I would just recommend it. Check it out. If I tell you what it's about, I'll kind of ruin things, but it's just, it's kind of like a creepy thing, but I enjoyed it. So I couldn't remember the name of it, but I remember who was in it.
I love going into movies blindly. Sometimes I don't even like reading the synopsis or watching the trailers anymore because I feel like they give away so much.
Yeah. Well, was there anything else you wanted to mention about Little Shop of Horrors before we wrap this up for you?
I honestly don't think so. I took a few notes just to kind of like refresh my memory on some things earlier, and I think we covered everything.
Yeah, and if anyone hasn't seen it, go out and watch it. It's one of the great, not just like horrors, comedies, musicals, like all of those genres. It's one of the best of all of them. Like,
give it a chance.
It's like the music is up there with Grease. You may not believe it. You may not believe me. It is. They're that catchy. Just because you don't hear them on the radio, they are so, so, so good, and they will get stuck in your head.
So, since you were talking about, you have a new show, your horror podcast. What is a horror classic that you can watch pretty much any time?
A horror classic? Ooh. I'm trying to think of what we've covered too. I mentioned we just covered Scream. Classic. And now I'm trying to categorize like what is classic. I will say I love B horror, and that's a lot of the movies that we've covered for our first like handful of episodes. We're now getting to, you know, jumping around to other types like Scream, for example. But like one of my favorite B horror movies, if you like B horror and you like horror comedy, is Blood Diner. It was our first full episode for the podcast. You can also listen to us talk about it if you don't want to watch it. I recommend watching it first, but 1987, Blood Diner, ridiculous, over the top, practical effects. It's hilarious. It's also gross. There's a lot of gore in it. But that's one of the first movies that Ali and I bonded over when we first met back in, like, I don't even know, 2009, 2010. So I wouldn't say that's a classic, but when I think of the classics that I enjoy, Little Shop is one of them. Phantom of the Opera. I can say that one too. There are so many different versions of Phantom of the Opera, so you can really just take your pick, I guess.
Okay. Have you guys done Sleepaway Camp yet?
We haven't covered it, but I have seen all of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So those will be interesting episodes.
Yeah.
My friend and I, we have that thing where if we find out someone hasn't seen Sleepaway Camp, we make sure they watch it with us. So
without telling them anything, just watch it.
Yes.
It's the best.
I've not seen it, so it's their reaction, so it makes it even better.
You gotta watch it now if you haven't seen it.
Oh yeah. I guess that's what I'm doing this evening.
Reaction. So
record my reaction.
You gotta record yourself for us.
Yeah.
Okay. I will do that.
But if you want to tell everybody where they can find you, Allison, that'd be great.
Yes. So my Instagram is still at Sienna because they won't let me change it. But my Twitter is, or whatever it's called now, at the Allison K. You can just check out my website, AllisonK.com. That has all my social media, all of my websites, Patreon, fun things like that. Also links to the Chainsaw Girls podcast are all within my website. Like I mentioned, we have a live screening October 20th. I don't know when this episode is coming out, but I would imagine before then, probably. But October 20th, if it hasn't already passed, in Buffalo, New York, come watch The Lost Boys with Ali and myself. You can find our podcast on all major platforms and YouTube. Most of our social media is at Chainsaw Girls Pod. And I think that covers mostly everything. Also, my website, allisonk.com, has all of my upcoming events. I'm going back to Hawaii to do Oos Wrestling. I'm their women's champion right now, October 10th. I'm going to Australia October 26th. Well, I'm going to be going before that, but the show is October 26th for Indie Girls. Nice. My first time in Australia. I'm very excited and nervous about that long flight, but it's going to be fine.
A lot of different movies you can watch, hopefully.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to really rack them up. So all your recommendations, I might just save them for that flight.
There you go. Gisberto?
You can find me here and on Instagram. I don't even know what my handle is. I'll tag myself in the post when we share this, and then you can find me there.
Hell yeah.
Guys, you can follow me at Rob Wilkins on X. I'm also on Instagram and Threads at Fightful Rob. And then every Friday on Fightful Overbooked at 3 o'clock, it's Coexisting with Rob and Maggie, where we cover everything that's happened in the world of wrestling in the past week and maybe stuff that's going on in the future. But want to say thank you very much to Allison for joining us, and make sure you check out her podcast. It sounds awesome. And we want to say thank you again for tuning in. It's been our first episode in a long time, but we are back and we are excited to do more. So thank you guys, and we hope you enjoy Little Shop of Horrors, and we will see you guys very soon. Peace out.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.